Hello everyone, I am Mirta Hurtado Rivas. No VIPs or rock stars, just simple people sharing their life stories to trigger discussions around important topics, or simply to inspire us to embrace challenges ourselves. Welcome to Leaderching. Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Leaderching. We have been quiet for a while because of the summer break, but now that September has started, I'm very happy to welcome to this episode my friend and colleague, Judith Lantos from Hungary. Hi, Judith, how are you?
Hi, Mirta. I'm very fine, and I was looking very much forward to our chat because we haven't been talking for a long time now.
That's true. And truth be said, actually, the pandemic has, you know, kept us a little bit apart. But now with things going a little bit back to normal, I hope that soon we will be able to come together somewhere and have our usual chats and, you know, conversations. So thank you for joining me, Judith, for our audience. Judith is managing partner at The Newbie Legal. She is located in Hungary, in Budapest. And actually, Judith and I met via the European Community Trademark Association, better known as ECTA. But that's not actually what defines us, but rather just some common interests that we have overall. So Judith, let me just start by asking you the first question. I would be very curious to know what you wanted to become when you were a child.
Well, it's an interesting question, and also depending on what age. So when I was in secondary school, I was thinking of becoming a psychologist. But then as I grew older, the law somehow came to the pipeline. And when I was in high school, I was very much looking forward to become a lawyer. So I learned quite hard for the university exams. So from that time, I wanted to become a lawyer.
Thanks, Judith. Maybe if I can come back. It's interesting that you wanted to become a psychologist. Can you maybe explain a little bit what actually triggered your curiosity towards psychology, if there was something in your environment or in your family that triggered that?
Yeah, well, actually, psychology was not within our family. But I had a very good friend in high school, like in gymnasium, and she wanted to become a psychologist, and her father was a very good psychologist. So maybe this is one of the reasons that it became to like one of the options. But law was more in the family because my father is a patent attorney. He's not a lawyer, but he's a well-known patent and trademark attorney in Hungary and also worldwide. And also I had many lawyers and sisters, so grandfather and grand-grandfather. So this is how the law came finally into the pipeline.
Excellent. So something that was already somehow in the family. Now, it's interesting that you also had kind of considered psychology as one opportunity. When you reflect back a little bit today to your work as a managing partner, for instance, do you believe psychology plays a role in your day-to-day work?
Yes, it is very much help. It is very much helpful, and it plays a role because being a part of a big team, and also when you have employees and also you have colleagues and part of management, you have to deal with a lot of personal issues. Doing communications and all these kind of activities. So yes, psychology helps me a lot. And maybe later we can talk about it, that psychology now and coaching plays quite an important role now in my private life as a hobby. But coming back to your question, yes, this attitude helps me when being a managing partner and also as a lawyer. So with client, it helps a lot how to deal them.
Thank you. I was wondering, you know, in Leaderching, one of the things that we try to understand better and to share is really our views on what a good leader is. And I wanted to hear from you if you could share with us some of the characteristic or important elements that you consider a person should be able, you know, to manage, to have, to excel in order to be a real good leader.
Yeah, I think to become a good leader, you have to have very good EQ, so EQ, so emotional quotients, because it is more and more important apart from IQ. So I think you have to have a good empathy towards people to listen to what they really want to say, and they are saying, to try to place yourself into their shoes. So try to understand what and why they are thinking, because communication is very much depending on whether we interpret and understand really with active listening what the other person would like to say. And also you have to motivate people very well. And it is also one of the features of this emotional quotients, is that how can you motivate people, and how you can work in team, and how you can make efforts within your team.
So I think also one element that you are indirectly kind of indicating is the fact that in order to be able to motivate people, you must have also the capacity to understand where the strengths of people are, because
yeah.
often enough, in order to motivate ourselves even, we kind of need to leverage those strengths, right?
Yeah.
So with our associates or our colleagues, I think when you say motivation, it goes hand in hand with actually not only knowing what the kind of objective skill set is, like subject matter expertise, but also how the person ticks, right?
Yeah. It is a very, very wise definition and statement. Yes, because you have to know the strength of the person, because this is how you can motivate him or her. And also, it is very important that every person can bring the best out of him and her. So if you know their strength, you can give them such tasks and duties to make that they that fits to their strength.
Excellent. Now, I was wondering, Judith, maybe you as a leader, sometimes what I'm struggling with at the moment is this new type of leadership that we need to embrace, which is, as you just mentioned, it's a lot about communication, it's a lot about empathy, a lot about soft skills, it's a lot about, you know, creating teams, you know, cohesion, teamwork overall, collaboration. But at the same time, we know that still we need to make, you know, some real numbers work. We need to commit to deadlines. We need to commit to results. And there is sometimes a tension field between how do you actually leave room for creativity and innovation, for people to try out things, where obviously there is always the risk for failure, because that's normal. It's why we fail that we learn. But at the same time, in the legal profession, sometimes we have the feeling that it's really not the right playing field for something like that. And I was wondering, how do you kind of, you know, balance out those two? Sometimes they appear to be contradicting. When you look closer, I think they come more together than we believe. But I think sometimes it feels like you still need to be someone who knows how to give top-down decisions or make things happen. But at the same time, you are asked to make things go bottom up. So what is your view on that, and how do you navigate this challenge?
Yeah, this is also a very good question. Well, I haven't thought about this, like as you said, that I haven't set this strategy in myself, but I think I somehow instinctively I'm doing it, because sometimes, for example, you have to take quick decisions or be very rapid. For example, when it's a deadline or when something went wrong, so you have to be rapid, and then you give rather direct messages that please do this and that. That's clear. But when we have some more time, or when the work is rather creative to finding out possible solutions, then we can do some brainstormings together. And I involve my team very much in 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 uh, in this kind of common thinking, because I think if you invite other people to become creative, they first of all they appreciate it and they are motivated and they can come up with very good ideas. And then we discuss all these ideas, and as a team, we find out together the best solution. It's a mixture of the ideas of many persons. So I think it works quite well in reality. Okay.
Thank you, Judith.
Bless you.
And just I think really you gave an excellent example in the sense that at the end of the day, very often the practical side of things will lead us in the right direction. There is aspects of projects or of matters where we kind of intuitively have the feeling this is something that I should discuss with more than myself, because I believe that having different opinions on this is going to give me a broader choice of options and maybe even better options than what I'm thinking of myself. And I think most of us kind of have that feeling, right? And often enough, that's what we call strategic thinking, right? When something has strategic impact or value for our clients or our companies, often enough, we have the feeling, okay, this is something that it's better discussed in a broader setting. And then there are things where probably it's more about some tasks that are more repetitive or automated, or that doesn't need so many people to be on board to actually make it happen, where direct messages or even, giving specific mandates can work very well. I really like the fact that, at the end, what you're saying is a lot is about ensuring that we prioritize things in the right way, that we define really where is the added value, where the thinking part is really what we're looking for, where the diversity of thinking is important. And then those things where we believe that they can be done in a more kind of, quick way, fast, paced, to get to a result. So I like very much the type of categorization, and I think it's very useful. I kind of have the same feeling as you that it comes more intuitively than by analysis. But I think that once we start to observe ourselves and others, I think it's really helpful then to sometimes step back and try to figure out, okay, what type of issue is this, and what type of work do I really need to do around it?
I really like now what you are saying, and actually from now on, I will also want to look at myself maybe from the outside if time allows me. So if something is not that urgent, because as you said, if we observe ourselves, you can be even more, how do you say, conscious or mindfulness, and that helps us to choose the better option. But it's very nice to discuss with you, because now I understand my how to say instinctively good behavior in this sense in a more professional way. So it was a very nice thought. Thank you. It's a nice issue.
You're so welcome. And you just mentioned something else that really kind of triggers my next thought. And that is the fact that our days, leaders, managers are asked to look at themselves. So the introspection, right? Like doing this work as to looking into ourselves and trying to define what is it that triggers certain things in us, what is it that makes us tick, what is it that makes us, go beyond and above things. I think to me that's a very important element, because you mentioned communication, motivation of teams, empathy, so the kind of the emotional quotient that's really important. For me, I think the more I get experienced, or the more I also confront myself with complex challenges, I realize that the better I know what drives me, then the better I'll be also be able to, to kind of down-tune my weaknesses, but also leverages my strengths. I'm not sure how do you see this with the introspective part? Because I think because you mentioned it so naturally, I just wanted to go back to that.
It's a very good question, because as I mentioned, I also learned coaching, And I'm just getting prepared for another exam. And for this part of emotional quotients, I never knew that there what are the how do you say the parts of it, like the hypothesis, what it consists of. And when I saw this PowerPoint presentation of my teacher, I became very happy and enthusiastic because she listed all these different aspects that you just mentioned, and this is in the in the in what emotional quotients is. And what you said, one of them is you are able to how do you say analyze yourself and what you are feeling and what is your when you have some activity and your feeling, what is the relationship between them. And yes, this is seeing us and analyzing ourselves, and this is a very important feature of emotional quotients, because when I'm doing it and when we are doing it as leaders, you can be a better leader when you know your reactions and why you are feeling what. And not also actually not only professionally but also in our private lives. So when you are mindfulness, I think this is the correct English word for this. So when you are conscious and you observe yourself, then it can help you in all areas of your life, which is very
Thanks for,
important.
yeah, I think you touched upon, I know that for some of our, listeners, maybe the word mindfulness and being mindful is a little bit overrated and overused because it has been all over the place for the last couple of years. There is a trend, right, that came with that, and especially during the pandemic, obviously we have heard a lot about it. I like it in the sense of, as leaders, one of the things we struggle with sometimes, at least I did so during several years of my career, is always finding the balance between, doing the right amount of work for the best results and not going overboard and kind of doing too much, and hence kind of either having your private life being limited because of that, or sometimes even your health. So I like this in the sense of being present will allow me to do the thing that I am concentrating on at that specific moment much better than what was so-called a strength, the multitasker, right? We were actually brought up in a period of time where multitasking was very trendy. That was our trend when we were younger. And I think now we're going a little bit away of that, and it's actually being realized that it's very important to be able to be present in the moment and what you're doing and what you're feeling. And hence doing that very well, and as consciously as you can, and then kind of going to the next thing and not trying to do several things at the same time. So I think it's really good that you brought mindfulness up, even though I know that some of our listeners sometimes are kind of, oh my God, we spoke so much about this. It's a little bit of too much this word being used in a lot of contexts. Judy, just you mentioned something that I think to me is important, and maybe to, I know that to some of our listeners as well. It's you spoke about diversity of thinking when you brainstorm, when you look for like creative solutions, or when you are faced with complex challenges. Can you maybe just explain in a few words why you think that this diversity of thinking is so important?
Yeah, I think it is important because for of many reasons. For example, there is not only one truth, as you can say. So if you have an idea, that could be one option, but other people have other good ideas. So if you see an issue that you try to solve from this different aspects, it can be more colorful. If you see through the eyes of different people, so people with different characteristics. So for example, one person has this good idea, the other person has another good idea. So you can bring into existence a very good complex how do you say solution. So I would say that those in that and that's my experience in my profession and among the persons I know from private life and also from my profession, but now we're talking about how they are working, that there are some kind of people who they are, how do you say, sure that what I do, that's right. And they go like this. There is a very, how do you say, I don't want to say, but there are some words for this which are very now in fashion. For example, narcissist in English, I think it's said. So who knows what I'm doing? That's sure. And sometimes you have to be as a leader very sure, and as we discussed, give direct instructions. That's okay. But when thinking together, I think it's kind of a narrow thinking on another way that they think that the only truth is what they have. And this thinking together and sharing different point of views and ideas, it's more close to the good human nature. That's my idea, and this is why I do it with my colleagues very much. I like to work like this.
Excellent. I think what you're depicting is really also very much needed nowadays, right? Because we have moved from looking at issues solely from one specialty perspective, from one industry, from one, subject matter expertise. So, let's say in an environmental problem is not going to be looked on only from a geographical perspective or from scientific perspective, but there is going to be also social components playing in there. So a lot of the big issues that we are experiencing our days are complex and touch upon a lot of different areas of sciences, but also just of knowledge, right? So my thinking is also in our area, in the legal area, we see issues that require sometimes, someone who knows about IT, some other one who
Yeah.
has a specialist in marketing, some other one who knows about how to launch a product. So I think what you explained makes a lot of sense to me because it's the complexity of matters is increasing. And if we want to make sure that we find tailored solutions or solutions at all, then we need to kind of broaden our kind of horizon. Sometimes it may take a little bit more time, I have the feeling, because we are more people. But I think overall, I agree with you. My feeling is the result is a better one. And we're not even touching upon how motivating it is to have people actually talk to each other, right? Because there is also an important social component there to create cohesion within a team and to create a feeling of belonging, right? Doing things together. But thanks for sharing that. I want to switch gears a little bit and maybe also touch upon you the fact that you have been a female leader for a long time. I know that you are my first guest from Hungary, so I'm sure that people will be a little bit curious to hear. So, how is diversity and inclusion in Hungary? What is your feeling about the topic, for instance, with respect to gender equality? Is there still a lot of work to do, or do you believe that a lot of progress has already been achieved? What are your views on, on your national situation, maybe just based on your experience and how you have seen this?
Yeah, well, in gender equality, we have developed, but there is a place for us to develop still. So there are more and more women in leader positions, but I would say that still the majority of leaders are rather men. But we have developed. So there are also women politicians, which is very good. But I would say that there are some countries where they are ahead of us in this respect. But for example, within our firm, for example, the majority of the management is men, but there are also women. But interestingly, within the law firm part of our firm, we are much more women. So I would say that that's quite equal.
So when you think about the next generation, I know that you have also children. When you think about them, what is it that you would give them as a, as a recommendation, and what is it that you are trying to do for them to make sure that they actually get, someday to a place which is even more diverse and more inclusive than it is today?
Well, I tried my children to, how to say, educate since they were very small to trust in themselves, because I think self-trust is very important, and to be open-minded and try what they want to, even if they fail, then they can, you know, like failure is part, it's a natural part of development. So you don't have to be perfect in everything. You practice it and you develop. So this is also what I explained them. And to be open-minded, open for changes, because there are a lot of changes in the world. So I think they have a good basic to become successful and happy people. But the most important thing is to love themselves and to trust themselves, because I think self-love and self-trust is the basic of everything. I mean, in a positive way, I mean, but because if you are good with yourself, then you can be good with others as well.
I think we have discussed this in the past when we have met, that actually we both believe that actually it takes sometimes time to build up self-confidence. And even when we are already in, you know, leadership positions and so on, often enough as female leaders, we are still struggling with that and have to go back to this kind of place where we are kind to ourselves and are, you know, acknowledging that we are doing the things the best we can and without being too critical towards ourselves. So I like the vision that you have, that ensuring that the next generation grows up in a very self-confident and trustworthy way, you know, and trustful way. So both things, I think that's going to for sure be already a very solid foundation for their success as persons, but also as professionals. So let me just ask you, because I know that you not long ago have started with the coaching activities, and I just didn't want to let you go before you share a few words on that, because I'm very excited about that. It seems like a very nice kind of addition to what you were already doing. So how did you end up choosing to do that?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting issue. And first of all, I have to thank you, Mirta, because I don't know if you remember that when we were in Switzerland, in Geneva, at the ACTA meeting, we had a nice chat and I told about my plans to you. And you said, oh, it's kind of like, it's like coaching. And that was the point when you hit the nail in my head. And afterwards, I started thinking, yes, you are right. What I want to do is coaching, but I haven't realized it yet, because then I was already a mediator. So how is this? It was a development, a process, procedure in the past, I would say, 3-4 years. Because I always liked, as a lawyer, to negotiate things. I mean, of course, you have to be hard and do a litigation, that's sure. But the area closest to my heart within the legal profession has always been settling the disputes. And mm-hmm. then I became a mediator, and now I'm registered at the Ministry of Justice and also the Budapest Bar Association. I had already a few cases between lawyers and their clients when there were some issues. But after a while, I realized, when you mentioned coaching, that coaching skills is a must for mediation, because in mediation, you have to find the underlying interest of both parties and also their common interest. And for this, you have to be able to ask good questions. So this is why I enrolled to a coaching course last year during the pandemic. I did it online at a very, very good teacher in Hungary. And I just loved every minute of it. It was a very nice teaching experience. And afterwards, I decided that I will write on life and business coaching. And I wanted to learn some relationship coaching, so some private life coaching, because I thought I could help people also in this area and be their mentor. So I finished this course, which was also a very, very great experience. I learned a lot, and I did my website. In the English translation is called relationship.hu and com. And relationship, it's a wordplay in Hungarian, because of course ship is ship, but mm-hmm. this is why I put it with a capital S. but the Hungarian word would say relationship mentor, but in English it would have been too long. So this is why I choose the English title like this. And I'm very proud that my partner has planned my logo, which if you look at it, it can be either a compass or evening and morning star, as you say it in English, because what I wanted to do is like, and wanted to reflect in my brand that I'm helping people to find their way in their life. So this is where the compass is coming from, but I like this nice play with a star. And the whole layout of my website is based on the sea and the ship symbol. And I already have a few clients. For example, I had a young couple with a small baby who had some debates they developed quite well, and they when they came through successfully this difficult period of when they became parents, and they had a lot of discussions. So I'm very proud of this work. I also have some divorce coaching issues, because I also have some personal experiences how to overcome such situations. But I combine it with the family law. So I also started to brush up my family law knowledge, and it's very useful because I can advise also kind of like as a, I would not say as a lawyer, but in a mediation or coaching, to give some advice, but mainly it's focused on how they can overcome this situation. Or I have like private client, like in their private life and business life issues, I coach them. So whenever I have a little bit free time, I have a few clients and they fill me up. One would think that it makes you tired besides your lawyer's work to do coaching, but on the other way around, it fills me up very much. So I need this work apart from being a lawyer.
Sounds great, Judith, and congratulations again for, you know, this next achievement. I think it's really important for our younger listeners to realize and that it's never too late actually to pick up something. Sometimes it can take a couple of years to figure out what it is that we want to add to our lives to feel more fulfilled and to feel more motivated. I can only agree with you. My mentoring experience, especially as a mentor, has been a very enriching one. And even sometimes when I feel like it has been a very long week, I actually always look forward to the mentoring sessions, because it's always something that you get out of it, even as a mentor, not only as a mentee. And I think the kind of human exchange is very valuable and kind of can broaden your horizon, and actually can make you understand better also a lot of things about oneself and not only about the clients that we support. So with that, Judith, we come to a very last question, because we are a little bit over time. I wanted to know from you, if you could go back to your 20s, let's say when you were probably studying or just after you had finished your studies, and you could give some advice to yourself based on obviously your life so far, what would you tell Judith in her 20s?
Yeah, I have already, it's a good question, because I have been thinking about this quite often. To do what you want, and not to be afraid of trying yourself out, and be self-confident, what you mentioned. So I had to work on it quite a lot. So it would,
we all had,
be the best. We all had, yeah. So be self-confident and be happy.
Excellent. I think that's excellent advice for all of us and for our listeners. Once again, Judith, thanks so much, you know, for taking the time. I know that with your additional activities, you're even more busy than before. I really look forward to us meeting again soon in person. It seems like ages. It seems like this pandemic has been far too long, but let's hope and keep fingers crossed for everyone that we go back to a certain level of normalcy where we can meet again in a safe environment. So to everyone, thank you so much for joining me today. And once again, Judith, thank you for being my guest.
Thank you. Goodbye, Mirta. Thank you for the invitation.
I hope you liked this episode of LeaderCing in English. Don't forget to give us a thumbs up on your respective platform and subscribe to our podcast. See you soon!